What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
On a Friday night, we've arrived. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us, taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. We've got a jam-packed program tonight as we'll talk some Cardinals baseball, we'll talk some college football, we'll talk Billiken's basketball. We got a lot to get to between now and 8 o'clock. As always, if you do want to join the program, you can do so by calling, texting, tweeting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air, or you can leave a voice message for us via the Odyssey app. If you're listening on the app, you see where that microphone button is, you press it down, and your messages can come into the studio. So that's all the different ways that you can get connected with us. I haven't done this a lot. We haven't had a lot of shows really here recently between around the holidays, and I've been sick and all kinds of things. So I've not been with you here here recently, but I haven't just had one of the every once in a while. So this happens a lot during baseball season. I try to give some segments kind of back to you, the listener, where I give you a chance to chime in on some things. We haven't done that as much lately. And coming off all the noise around the Cardinals and Nolan Arenado, and also some of the things that John Mozeliak said to us yesterday on the Countdown to Opening Day show, I don't know if anybody's interested in talking through things, but if you are, coming up later on, we're going to give you an opportunity to chime in on how you're feeling about the way things are going. By the way, I don't know if I can officially announce this yet. I'm a wait. How about that for a tease? I'll officially announce what I want to announce on Monday, if I'm allowed to. I'll say this. Next week on the Countdown to Opening Day show, we're going to have a featured guest that I think you're going to want to hear from, that you really probably haven't been able to hear from. So I'll leave it at that. And once I get confirmation on everything, we'll pass that along coming up on Monday or later on what that's going to look like. But obviously it is Cardinals related because it is the Countdown to Opening Day show. So this is what we are going to this is what we're going to do here in this hour number one of the program today. In just a little while, we're going to talk with Connor Guerra. He covers college football for Saturday Down South. We will talk with him about the college football playoff, and we're going to get in with him just before kickoff of the Texas-Oklahoma State game, which is going to be going on this evening. And then later on this hour, something I want to do. Yesterday, we had John Mozeliak on the Countdown show. I thought he had some interesting things to say and some things that he had not said previously. And, you know, when we're airing the interview like we're doing yesterday, it's a conversation. It was me and Mike Claiborne talking with John Mozeliak. There's not really the opportunity to stop and assess some of the things that are being said. And that's also not really the format of the Countdown to Opening Day show. So if you were listening yesterday, you heard some of what Mo had to say. I'm going to play back for you some of the cuts from the conversation yesterday, and then I'm going to attempt to add, I wouldn't say context, it's not context that's needed, but I'll attempt to kind of address what was said, because I thought there were some interesting things that were said from Mozeliak yesterday. So that's going to be coming up later on this hour, and then it's going to probably be after that we give you the opportunity to react. In our second hour, Bob Ramsey is going to join us. What a great win for the Billikens against St. Bonaventure the other night. It was fun watching that game, and they were in control of it, And then the Bonnies, they made a little bit of a run there right there at the end, but they were able to hold on and they were able to get the win and they're able to sit on it as a they're the 3-0 team right now in A-10 play. They're not playing this weekend. They're not going to play again until Tuesday, and they're going to have a really tough match. They've got a tough road trip coming up, one of the toughest road trips in the A-10. They'll go to VCU and then to Richmond over the course of the next week or so. So they'll play Tuesday at VCU, and then a week from tomorrow, they'll play at Richmond. But they look like a different team, but I would say they look like the best version of themselves since league play got started. We would see those flashes during non-conference play. Well, it's more than a flash right now as they've been able to put some things together. So we'll talk with Bob Ramsey, and then we'll wrap up the program with our weekly Friday conversation with our guy, Kevin Wheeler. He's going to join us for our weekly baseball chat that's going to come up towards the end of the program. So that's what's on tap for today. As always, if you want to join the program, again, you call, text, you tweet, or your voice message. You call or text at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. If you want to tweet at me, it's at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air, or you can leave those voice messages right there on the Odyssey app if that's how you are listening. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Connor O'Gara is going to join us. We'll talk college football with him in front of tonight's college football semifinal game and then in the college football playoff. That's coming up in just a moment. We'll roll on after this on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Just a couple more college football games left in the season tonight. Ohio State and Texas in the national championship game. Yesterday was Notre Dame getting a win against Penn State. And to talk all things college football, very happy to welcome in a national columnist for Saturday Down South, also hosting the Saturday Down South podcast. He is Connor O'Gara. You follow him on Twitter at CJ O'Gara. Connor, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, good to be here. You know, always love to be able to talk in the midst of the playoff. A lot of crazy developments I feel like we've had over the course of the last few weeks in this sport. And just when you think, oh, yeah, we got everything kind of figured out. Portal looks settled and coaching carousel looks settled. I mean, who knows? I mean, this sport just always kind of throws you for a loop.
Yeah, and from a Saturday Down South perspective, and I know the company has websites focusing on the Big Ten and other leagues as well, but Saturday Down South, very much an SEC-centric website. It's odd watching these games without any of the classic, I know Texas obviously in the league, but without any of the classic SEC representation.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is doing the SEC's bidding at this point, which is just crazy. I mean, think about that. Like, if you had told an SEC fan back in 2021 when Texas and Oklahoma were announced to be coming to the SEC, if you had said, hey, by the time that they come, the lone representative in the final four of the college football playoff from the SEC is going to be Texas. SEC fans would have looked at you and just laughed you out of the room. And at that point, it's worth remembering, that was before even Steve Sarkisian had coached a game at Texas. I mean, that's how long ago that was and how much things have changed. A program that started off at 5-7 and everybody's still making the Texas is never going to be back folks jokes, and to sit here and be like, wow, I mean, Texas, you know, gets to the SEC championship, a place that Texas A&M is still trying to get to after 13 years in the SEC and 13 years now for Texas A&M and Mizzou in this conference. And, you know, Mizzou has obviously been able to get to Atlanta, but, you know, we've seen in the past, it's difficult to sustain success in this conference. And I think Texas has check so many of those boxes of what it's going to be able to take. And for Oklahoma, it's just been a totally different story in that journey. So, yeah, it is strange to be talking about Texas and Ohio State as a Big Ten SEC matchup.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what I mean, just in the sense that the classic SEC teams, the Alabamas, the Georgias, they're not there. And credit goes to Texas for what they've been able to do. We'll see what happens tonight. What do you think about tonight's game? Not many people are giving Texas much of a chance against Ohio State.
I'm giving Texas a small chance. I still picked Ohio State to win this game. If we're talking about it from an odd standpoint, I do think Texas has a chance to be able to cover. Now, there are so many different factors that could prevent Texas from being able to play to the level that we've seen Ohio State play at during these first two playoff games, and most notably Jeremiah Smith. The guy has just looks like a revelation for Ohio State this season, and especially in the college football playoff, wherein he's been unguardable. And everything you kind of throw at that guy, Will Howard is just kind of stepping back and going, nope, I'm going to take my chances that he's going to win that matchup. But it's also the fact that Ohio State's got the number one defense in college football. And Ryan Day deserves a lot of credit for that Jim Knowles hire a few years ago. And seeing what that's going to look like against the Texas offense is going to be everything. Can you get pressure on Quinn Ewers? Can you trust that Steve Sarkisian is going to be able to put his quarterback in favorable spots so that he's not a sitting duck back there? Because this is someone who's worked off multiple injuries this year, an oblique injury, an ankle injury, and is someone that has really had to kind of figure things out when, you know, there have been moments where it looks like he hasn't really had his best stuff. And obviously what he did 4th and 13 against Arizona State, the biggest throw, the biggest touchdown that Texas has had since the Vince Young getting the edge against USC in the national championship 2 decades earlier, what he did in that moment really told you a lot about him. So can he overcome some of these weaknesses we've seen? That's going to determine this matchup, in my opinion. And I'll give Texas a puncher's chance just because the talent is there and people are discounting that. They haven't been paying attention. But no, I think Ohio State and that $20 million roster has got a bit too much.
Yeah, it's interesting something you just said. You talked about trust, and that's been one of the key things in this, especially with these teams that have been playing. You know, we talked a lot about both Penn State and Notre Dame. Can you trust them to win a big game? Can you trust Quinn Ewers to do that? Can you trust anything about Texas? Can you trust Ohio State with what we saw with them at the end of the regular season and with their quarterback Will Howard? In many ways, it's not about which team is excelling. It's about which team do you trust not to make mistakes.
It is, and you know, it's difficult this time of year to kind of figure out who these teams are going to be. You know, we kind of forget that it is an extended layoff in between these playoff games. And that's the one thing that I would say. If you're of the impression that Ohio State is going to show up like a world beater in the way that it's been these first two games, I'd say, you know, go back and look at kind of the context of those matchups. The Tennessee game, we now have the context of realizing, oh, that team was pretty ticked off after the way that things played out against Michigan, and it showed up with some bad intentions against Tennessee. And Oregon, you know, you have the storyline of knowing that's a rematch. That's the game that Ohio State was so devastated to lose up in Eugene, the Will Howard, you know, running out the clock thing, and the way that all played out. And Ohio State has looked like a team that has had something to prove. Are they the team that still comes out with that sort of edge as the 6-point favorite? I haven't looked at the line in the last few hours, but are they still coming out with that type of edge against this Texas team? Do you trust them to show up with that gear? Because if they show up like that, yeah, nobody's beaten them. Nobody, Penn State wouldn't have beaten them. Notre Dame, I don't think, is capable of playing at that level. Texas, I don't think, is quite able to play at that level. And that's kind of the question is, are we going to look back on this year of college football and go, well, yeah, it was just kind of Ohio State peaking at the right time, having that Michigan loss be the best thing that ever happened to them, and having them go on this rampage that felt like 2019 LSU. Are we going to look back on this season and have that be the clear takeaway? It's possible, and it certainly feels like the most likely outcome at this point.
Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South continuing to join us. From a local perspective here in St. Louis, I found it to be interesting because a lot of Penn State fans were not happy with Drew Aller because of that interception that he threw. A lot of people talk about why they let Bo Pribula walk out the door. Well, that's a guy who's going to be playing at Missouri next year, and he looked pretty well good last night from a Penn State perspective, just based off what I was reading.
I'll tell you, you know, I haven't been the biggest Drew Aller guy, and I'm not trying to say this to be like some sort of a victory lap. I thought some of the NFL things with him were a little bit premature, and, you know, you see the lack of weapons outside of Tyler Warren that Penn State had, and the fact that they had zero catches from wide receivers in that game last night, which is just baffling to consider that. But I had moments in that game where I thought Bo Pribula would look really good right now in this Penn State offense with finishing off some drives. And there are going to be some things that I think Penn State fans will look back on this team and go, man, it would have been nice to have our backup quarterback who played a significant role for us on this team. And I think that, you know, we'll see what it looks like with Kirby Moore and this Mizzou offense and some of the different things that they're going to be able to do with him, getting the quarterback run game going in ways that it just wasn't there with a banged up version of Brady Cook this year. And I think that's really going to benefit Mizzou. Can Bo Pribula become more of a one read and go type guy where he's actually able to work through his progressions as a passer, because he really wasn't asked to do that with the packages he was running at Penn State. I think Mizzou fans are going to find him to be a really, really fun addition, and they can kind of build around him. But yeah, I do think that there's always going to be a piece of this Penn State puzzle going, man, I wonder if that was really the last piece right there. And if things had been different, if they had, could have had him available, if that could have been the difference to finish off some of those drives.
Where do you put Mizzou right now? Because when you look at their win totals over the last few years, they're right there with the upper echelon of the SEC, but much like Texas, even though Mizzou's been in the league much longer, a lot of people still don't look at them as a classic SEC kind of team. Is there still a league-wide bias against the University of Missouri?
I think that's always going to be there. I do. And I think it's going to be there for the teams in the SEC that don't recruit top 10 classes on a yearly basis, whether that's Arkansas, whether that's Kentucky, whether that's Vanderbilt. If you're outside of the top 10 nationally, you aren't considered a big time player in the SEC. And you'll always have a bit of that underdog sort of mentality. And people will dismiss the fact that Mizzou is 21-5 over the course of the last two seasons. I mean, you look at it and you're like, dang, they really didn't have bad losses. They lost to at least solid teams. They didn't have these unbelievably embarrassing losses where even a team like Ole Miss, you know, this year losing the way that it did to a 4-win Kentucky team, you're like, man, you were supposed to be at the peak of your powers. You still had that type of a letdown, and bam, everybody's going to talk about the Vandy loss and the Oklahoma loss. And you look back at this 2-year run that Mizzou had, and you're like, well, you really didn't have those games in which you just, hey, you know what, you just forget about you. And that's a credit to Eli Drinkwitz. And he's reached a level with this program that I didn't think they were quite capable of getting to. But moving forward, yeah, it's probably a bit more middle of the pack. And people are going to want to use that confirmation bias based on the recruiting rankings to say, hey, I don't think you're really legit. I don't think you're built to hang in the SEC. That will be kind of the understanding moving forward. But who knows? Maybe they can overcome that. I think as long as you can keep this core together, that coaching staff, I think you're going to be setting yourself up really well. But yeah, it is a really nice 2-year run that a lot of programs across college football would love to be able to have.
100%. Last thing for you, the biggest news in the SEC in the last week, Carson Beck making the decision to move on from Georgia. Looks like he's going to head to Miami. How surprised were you by that decision?
In some ways, very surprised, because I think you need to understand like the timeline of this, because if you had told me that a month ago that he was going to hit the portal, I would have said, wait a minute, what? Like that's a pretty surprising result of the three options that he in theory had, including go to the NFL, which was his original choice, or come back to Georgia. But over the course of the last few weeks leading up to the Sugar Bowl, you heard a different sort of attitude talking about Gunnar Stockton, his replacement in that game, compared to Carson Beck. And everybody's talking about, oh, Gunnar Stockton, he drives this 1984 F-150 that's got over 300,000 miles on it. Meanwhile, Carson Beck is the dude with the Lamborghini NIL deal and the private jet NIL deal. And you could tell that things had just kind of run their course. And so with that context, when this news came out, you're like, all right, well, that's not a surprise. And oh, he's going to go where his girlfriend is at Miami, and he's going to finish his college career there. And then what, 24 hours it was, we find out that he is indeed going to Miami. And it's surprising when you consider he was preseason number one pick in the NFL draft and the way too early mocks and all those different things. But also maybe not that surprising when you consider that guys that have disappointing years that can kind of use the system to have that extra year of eligibility, you know, you can take a disappointing senior season, I put in air quotes, and go, ah, you know what, let me actually just rewrite my story and just play somewhere else, get millions of dollars to be able to do that, and then, you know, kind of go from there. We'll see if Quinn Ewers ends up doing that. That's the next one to kind of keep your eye on that everybody's been talking about, Notre Dame or Oregon, where he could end up, maybe not going to the NFL after kind of a disappointing season in terms of his NFL draft prospects. So, yeah, it is just a wild development. And it's a sign, man, just as we were talking about before, college football, it always has a way of kind of surprising you, and you got to just always be on your toes with this stuff.
Saturday Down South is an incredible website, and you guys just kind of did a redo of it. It looks fantastic. It always, and the content is always great. Encourage people to check that out for themselves. Check you out as well, Connor, on Twitter at CJ O'Gara. Connor O'Gara, join us. Connor, thank you so much for the time. Enjoy the game tonight, and hopefully we can catch up again in the future.
Absolutely. Really appreciate it.
That's Connor O'Gara joining us on the program. We appreciate him taking some time with us on a very busy day, previewing what's going to be going on tonight and just talking some SEC football, Mizzou football. Certainly a lot of things to get to there. We'll take a break and we'll jump back into Cardinals baseball. I want to break down a little more some of the things that were said yesterday around this time by John Mozeliak when he was on the Countdown to Opening Day show. We'll get into that coming up in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Back at it on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Happy for another hour and a half or so. We're taking you until 8 o'clock this evening in the 7 o'clock hour. Bob Ramsey's going to join us. We may talk a little Cardinals with him, but mostly Bilkins basketball. Kevin Wheeler will join us in the 7 o'clock hour as well, and we'll talk all Cardinals baseball with him. Wanted to play back for you some of what John Mozeliak said yesterday during the Countdown to Opening Day show, and kind of add on my thoughts on some of the things that he had to say, because I thought there were some interesting things that were mentioned. And we'll give you a chance to respond as well coming up later on in the show, whether you're calling or texting at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can also tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, or you can leave a voice message on the Odyssey app. All right, so let's again, if you heard the interview yesterday, you've heard some of this, but I wanted to play back some of these cuts, and then I'll kind of jump in and tell you my thoughts on what's being said. First off, when it comes to Nolan Arenado, a few things he said. First off, did not run away from the fact that the intention absolutely is still to trade Arenado.
Elephant in the room would be, what do we do with Nolan? And so still talking with some teams on that, and you know, hopefully once that gets wrapped up, if that does, then we can pivot and do a couple other things.
Yeah, and we'll get to that pivot and those other things that they'd like to do coming up in just a moment. But sticking with Arenado, you know, one of the things that we have discussed a lot, whether it's on this show or other shows on KMOX or on the Gas House Gang, things like that, about the value that exists for Arenado. And right now, it's not clear if there is a lot of value for him out there across the industry. He's coming off back-to-back seasons where his offensive profile has gone in a direction that you would not want it to go. He's still a very high-level defender at third base, but he's got a fair amount of money that's attached to him as well, and there's only some teams that he would be interested in going to. All that being said, Mo does believe that there is still value to be had in trading away Arenado.
We certainly think he still has value as a player, and you know, candidly, I think he's going to help somebody, and whether that's the St. Louis Cardinals or someone else, that'll still to be determined. But you know, I think there's a lot left in his tank, and so I'm certainly not just going to walk away from this.
Yeah, and I never expected them to walk away from it. I did think it was interesting that he said whether it's the St. Louis Cardinals or somebody else, obviously their intention, it remains to trade Nolan Arenado, but the deal's got to get done first. And speaking of that, and there's been a lot of talk about this, and I don't want to relitigate things that were said a month ago. Like, that's not really what I want to do, because we spent a lot of time after Mo announced at the winter meetings that their intention was to trade Arenado. We talked through him making the decision to make that declaration. But I did find this to be, of everything that he said to us yesterday, I thought maybe the most notable thing that was said was when he made that decision to go ahead and say, yeah, the intention is to trade Nolan Arenado. They actually thought that at that point in time, there was a deal done that they would be able to finalize fairly quickly after that.
Like anything in this business, everything's sort of a time stamp in life, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time when we were talking about that, I thought pretty confidently that we had a deal in place and we were likely going to move him. Here we are, what, a month later, and obviously that didn't happen. And so, you know, maybe had I known what I know today, I might not have spoken as I spoke that night. But you know, what I said is what I said, and so you have to live with that. But you know, lesson learned, lots of moving parts in this business, and nothing's ever for sure until it's for sure.
Yeah, I find that to be interesting on so many different levels. First off, let's start with this. What else could have he said? What else could have he said? And I had some conversations about this on social media today. He could have lied. He could have not answered questions. He could have just not met with us. He could have done all of those things. But let's live in a scenario where, like he does at the winter meetings every single year, he's going to bring us in the media up to the Cardinals suite, and we're going to sit down around a table or sit down in couches, and we're going to talk through the Cardinals and what's going on and what it's going to look like moving forward. What else could have Mo said? Because there, everything, especially from a position player standpoint, but it implicates pitching as well. This, everything this team wants to do on the field is connected to moving Nolan Arenado. So how does a John Mozeliak, and this is one of these, and I'm not sitting here trying to be the defender of Mo. That's not what I'm doing right now. I know there's a lot of criticism towards him, some of it very, very rational and very well deserved. Some of it, look, there's a dislike for him right now, and he could say just about anything, and people are going to take issue with it. But one of the things that I do appreciate, and I mentioned this yesterday on the show, is you ask Mo a question, he's probably going to, you know, within reason, he's probably going to give you an answer that's got some candor to it, that's got some honesty to it. So he brings us up during the winter meetings to talk about what 2025 is going to look like. Well, what the Cardinals want 2025 to look like is this. They want Nolan Gorman over at third. And they want to be able to play Brendan Donovan at second base a whole lot, because then that sets them up for what they want to do in the outfield and at the DH. It's all connected to each other. How in the world? So anytime I hear from people who are critical of Mo about how honest he was about the team wanting to trade Arenado at the winter meetings when he made those comments, anytime somebody's critical, my response to them is always, well, what would have you liked him to say? How do you talk about the plans for the 2025 Cardinals without saying that the intention is to trade Arenado? And I realize in the cut that I just played, Mo said that if he knew now what he, or if he knew then what he knows now, maybe he would have said it differently. I understand why he says that, because it's not a good look when you openly speak about trading Arenado and a month later, it seems like you're farther away from making that move than you were then. I'm not telling you it's a good look. It's a bad look. Not running away from that. Not a good look. But how do you speak about the 2025 Cardinals? I don't think you can. So what would you rather as a fan? And you know what? You can text this in. I'd be curious. So we're going to take some phone calls on this coming up later on as well. What would you rather as a fan? Would you rather just not knowing anything? That because so many of their plans are dependent upon being able to trade Arenado and they're not going to speak openly about that? So basically, you know, head goes into the sand and nothing is said about the team and that's just where it's at? Or would you rather a scenario where you do get an idea of what's going on? I think it's important for fans to understand the direction of the team. I do. And not always has the organization been great at informing fans, especially in the offseason, of kind of what's going on. I think they've been really good this offseason. I do. I think we have an idea of what they want to do. Now, what they want to do and what they actually end up doing, those might be two different things, because they have yet to be able to accomplish their goal, their main goal of trading Nolan Arenado. I get that. I do. But I think as a fan, if you don't have a sense of what's going on, like, I don't know if you're totally paying attention. I'm not saying that to be rude to you. You don't have to pay attention. I think the Cardinals have done a perfectly fine job at kind of telegraphing what's going on. Now, I had a back and forth on social media today with somebody. Because let's see if I can find this. Oh, I wasn't going to talk about this, but it's a good point. So a guy named Tony responded to a tweet that I had sent out about a conversation I had with Bernie today on the Gas House Gang. And basically, this tweeter accused Mo of lying about things. And I just say, can you give an example of what he's lied about? And this is what Tony tweeted back to me. And he said, what has he lied about? The retool, the rebuild? This is nothing more than a salary dump. Says the whole offseason has been nothing but a lie. And then, yeah, so that's the important part of that tweet. And I push back on that. I push back on that in a very hard way. There's two separate things going on right now. They are reducing payroll. We know they're reducing payroll. Not running away from the fact that they're reducing payroll. Not even telling you to accept the fact that they're reducing payroll. If you want to sit here and make the argument that, you know what, they really don't have to reduce payroll in this way to try to accomplish the other things that they're trying to do. Okay, like that is a valid statement, and it's something worth talking about at some point in time. That conversation might not be a right now conversation, but it's a conversation to be had. I don't think there is anything wrong with looking at what the Cardinals are doing and questioning whether or not the reduction of payroll is the need that they're telling you that it is. But that's one thing. The other side of it is the very legitimate, the very heavy lifting that's going on of redoing player development. And Heim Bloom is in charge of that, and they've already hired a Rob Serfolio, and they've hired a bunch of other people, and they're doing things. They are clearly doing things. So this is where this guy Tony, who I tweeted back and forth with, this is where he and I kind of got into it a little bit, because I've got no problem with him or anybody else questioning whether or not the Cardinals should be reducing payroll as much as they are. We can talk about it. I do have an issue with people who are not willing to accept the fact that the organization is doing things to try to get smarter and try to be better at player development. This isn't an overnight snap your finger, be done sort of thing. This is going to take some time. But for this team to get to a point of where they are going to be winning at a high level, on a consistent level, they've got to be producing high-end major league talent, something that bluntly they have not been doing. So they've hired a bunch of really smart people. They're going to employ a lot of different data and technology and things like that. They're redoing the spring training complex after a spring training wraps up this year. They're doing all these things. So, no, nobody's lying about the retool, the reset, the rebuild, whatever the heck you want to call it, the re-whatever. Nobody's lying about that. But what is going on is that has to happen while they also make the decision to cut payroll. And you get upset about the team cutting payroll. You can be upset about that. Not going to be mad at you for being upset about that. But you rope in this other thing that's going on. And really, They're two different things. I feel like I'm Jerry Seinfeld in the episode of Seinfeld where he and Elaine sleep together. And he's saying, you know, that they're really two different things. The sleeping and the other thing are two different things. There are two different things here. There's the reduction of payroll, but there's the thing I care a whole lot more about, and that's getting player development right. And that's what they're trying to do. And that's what I am more focused on. All right. I wasn't planning to go down that path. We've got more I want to play for Mo. We'll do that in just a segment, and we'll still give you an opportunity to chime in on this as well. It's all coming up. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Just a few minutes left here in hour number one of the show. Hour number two, so after the 7 o'clock news, I promise this to you, I'll give you the opportunity to chime in on all this Cardinal stuff when it comes to Arenado and everything else that's going on. We'll see. I think some people are a little bit tired out by it, honestly, because there's, you know, yesterday moved the story ahead a little bit. I'm a bit guilty of it because here I am talking about it. But I am also, I'm worn out on the different pieces of insider information that's coming out where, like, some of it's real and some of it's not. That's the frustrating thing in all this. And I don't say this to, like, denigrate any of the reporters out there because I think they're all really good at their jobs. I do. But whether it started with the list of teams that he reportedly would have accepted a trade to, that, you know, that list was immediately kind of questioned when that came out around the winter meetings. And then everything that, you know, are the Yankees interested in him or not? Are the Astros interested? Well, he's not going to go to the Astros. It's the Red Sox now. Then this, you know, recently this past week where we hear, well, maybe it's, you know, he might accept a trade to Seattle or Detroit. He's not going to take a trade to Houston, but he's going to take a trade to Seattle or Detroit. Like, that doesn't sound real to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's where there's so much misinformation in all of this. And, you know, the thing I always remind people, when you get information from insiders, you know, and this is, again, not a criticism of the insiders. This is the game that's played. That information many times is being placed. Like, there are, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, whatever, if you hear something from a certain reporter, those certain reporters are known for having relationships. Like, I can tell you what baseball reporters have a relationship with this agent, and what baseball reporter has a relationship with this agent, and what baseball reporter has a relationship with this front office and things like that. So then when you hear that information, you know a little bit, well, you know, this is probably coming from X, Y, or Z, and it makes it just look and feel a little bit different. And I think that's part of what's going on. I promise you, some of these details that we have heard about Arenado in the last month have come from a million different sources. I'm sure at times his agent have been a source. I'm sure at times teams have been a source. Whatever it might be, they're all a source, and it's trying. And, you know, one of the frustrating things in the world of, like, insider reporting is very, unless you have an arson judge type situation, very often if you get something wrong, does it really matter? It's about getting it right and getting it first for all these reporters. And there's not a lot of, like, accountability for when you get things wrong. You might have an embarrassing tweet that's going to sit out there for a little while. But the industry has turned into one where it's about getting it first. And sometimes getting it right is almost secondary to getting it first. And we're dealing with a little bit of that right now. I've got more I want to play for. I was going to play more for Mo this segment. I didn't get it. But we will open up the phones, the text messages, tweets, all that. If you want to get in here after the 7 o'clock news, 314-436-7900. How are you feeling about the direction of the Cardinals? That's next here on KMOX.